Welcome to Moms of Medicine. I'm your host, Allie Trainer, and this week I can't wait to share my conversation with Dr. Rithika Paris. She was my chief resident when I was a resident and is now a primary care physician and director of GME Wellness. We talked about her having her two babies prematurely, navigating roles and jobs with her partner who is also a physician, and what she had to do when she was working an overnight in a community hospital without a maternity ward and she forgot her pump supplies. I'm keeping the intro short this week because there is so much in this interview and it speaks for itself, so stay tuned until the end because Rithika has so much wisdom and experience to share. Well, thank you again for chatting with me today. I know you're from doing residency with you and having you and your partner be my chief residents when I was in residency. But for people listening, if you could just tell us your name, what your work life is, and a little bit about your family.
Yeah, sure. Well, thank you so much for having me, Allie. It's so great to reconnect. So my name is Rithika Paris. I am an internal medicine doctor, did my residency, as you mentioned, at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center with my husband in the same residency class as well. Now I'm a primary care doctor, though I had a short formal life as a hospitalist as well. And I focus a lot of my non-clinical work on professional development and physician wellness. In terms of the rest of my life, I also have now two sons, a 5-year-old who will be 6 in April.
I can't believe that.
Yeah. I know he was just a baby when I was a chief. And yeah. Another baby who will be a year in like 3 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
Which is blowing my mind.
Yeah. Yeah, and I actually wasn't planning on asking you this, but it kind of brought up the question as you were talking about you and Jim. Did you guys meet in residency or you met before that?
No, we met a long time ago. We met in college.
Oh, wow.
We met in college, only overlapped briefly in college. And then I went to medical school. He was actually in England doing a PhD, had a career change, kind of followed me to medical school.
No way.
And then I took some time off during med school so we'd line up and could couples match to BI. And so,
that's so funny.
A long journey.
Oh, wow. I had no idea.
Yeah.
And so, as you were mentioning, your first baby was like a very young baby when you were my chief resident. So, you had him when you were in residency, right?
Yeah, correct. So, I had him. He was born the end of my third year, we call it. I had been trying to time it so that he'd be born after residency ended, but at the time I had all these notions of how I thought I could control biology in the universe, and clearly I could not. He was born towards the end in the spring of my third year, and then he had just turned one when chief year started.
Okay. So out of kind of personal curiosity, and I'm sure some of our listeners too, because I think we all think that we can control biology and, you know, we're such planners and we think that we can plan, you know, the exact month that we'll have our baby. So what happened with you? How did your plan with biology work out?
Well, neither time did it work out the way I thought I would be able to make it work out. Yeah. I didn't even learn my lesson the second time. So the slightly longer version of the story is that my mother, we don't have any family who lives here in Boston with us. My mother works as a teacher, and so she has the summers off. Mm. And so as soon as I started talking about starting a family, she was like, well, you know, you have to have it in the summer so that I can come and help you. Cause as you know, I cannot take time off during the school year, and you have to have it in June so that I can maximize how much
I can
help
you. Oh my gosh, that's
amazing. And I was like, okay, mom. You've done this before. I'm sure that must be possible, even though I'm in
the
situation and knew that probably couldn't be possible. And if I'm being totally honest, I don't think there was any external pressure for this. I truthfully can say that, but I had internal pressure that, you know, I want to be able to take my time off without having guilt about other people covering me. And so my goal was that if I had the baby at the very end of residency or after residency ended, I would actually be between jobs. I'd be between residency and my hospital medicine job. And I could just kind of be off, like disconnected from work, not on, yeah. like not with an email inbox that's piling up and yeah. nobody covering me and no patients to be concerned about. And like I said, I truthfully don't think there was any external pressure, but rather like my own internal pressure. I know we all have that, right? Like we all have that, ideal that we want to strive towards. And I just thought, yeah, I just don't want to have anybody cover me. I want to finish my residency and do all the responsibilities that I signed up to do. And I kind of held that. And so between that and my mother being like, yeah, just have a baby in June. I was like, sure.
So no problem.
That was the plan. then actually my due date ended up being May. And then he was actually born a month early. And so then I had him in April.
And so what was that like for you then, having a baby in residency? Because, I think some people do, for whatever personal reasons, they do plan on having a baby in residency, which of course has its own challenges, but that was not your plan. So what, and even to, if you think there's anything relevant to share, what was it like being pregnant in residency? Because I know that's not easy either.
Yeah. So I've been reflecting on this and part of it is I have to apologize. I feel like it must be some sort of evolutionary coping mechanism to kind of forget
what, totally.
What happened back then. But in all honesty, I don't remember it being absolutely terrible. It was actually a little bit harder the second time around, and we can talk a little bit about how I felt it was harder the second time. But I kind of was just like, I didn't have another child. It was like, I just have to go to work and then take care of myself. There are not other responsibilities I have to have. And so I just kind of focused on that. And I was pretty open with other people. And I know other different people have, different takes on this and different comfort levels. And I completely respect that. But I remember being very early. I had bad nausea and vomiting in pregnancy the first time. Mm-hmm. I remember being on night float, in my first trimester. So before I was showing and just having to run to the bathroom, to dry heave or throw up.
Oh my God.
On an hourly basis. And the two residents I was on admitting with overnight, clearly saw me run in and out of the whole lounge, which is, the room that we work from. We call it the whole lounge. And they,
I'll just add there because people might be like, why are they calling it the whole lounge? It's like house officer HO.
So I was running out of the house officer lounge, back and forth. And, at some point they were just like, are you okay? And I just told them what was going on. And, it was a really bonding experience over that. They were the first people outside of I think my husband to know that I was pregnant, because of the shared experience. So in that sense, I was open about it. I felt good support from my attendings, from my interns. I remember being a resident leading the team on wards and having to run to the bathroom, or be eating a protein bar between patients on rounds. And I honestly felt really supported. I feel really fortunate. I think I do hear some stories of people sometimes not feeling as supported. And certainly that's something in our medical culture at large that I'm so glad you're creating a space to have these conversations with about. And when I hear those stories, it makes me feel so sad because I had the benefit of being in a place that I'm surrounded by people that were really supportive of it. I still worked really long hours. I still worked nights. I still worked in the ICU in Brockton and 30 hours.
Oh my gosh.
There were challenges. I have funny stories about Brockton if we have time about doing that was my last call rotation during my pregnancy, so it's pretty funny.
Oh wow.
Putting in central lines with a big belly and not,
oh my gosh,
having to worry about the sterile field.
I would love to hear your Brockton ICU stories. I will just say I think it's really refreshing to hear that you felt supported, because I don't think it's unique necessarily to women in medicine, but this feeling that you need to hide the first trimester because God forbid you miscarry, which is, a whole other conversation of why that needs to be private. But I think I've heard not just from you, but I think from a lot of women that in medicine that they ended up sharing their pregnancies a lot earlier than maybe women outside of medicine would, just because you gotta leave rounds to go to the bathroom. Yeah. Or like for me, I couldn't put in central lines as a fellow without an attending in there just in case, because I was so vagal, but like, I wasn't showing, but I had to tell people. And I think I similarly felt supported like you did, but, you know, it's interesting that this feeling that we need to hide pregnancies in the first trimester. And I don't know why.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I understand there are really, people have really good reasons for that, but I'm really glad that and it sounds like you also had experiences where we could be open about it. And I really do think that that helped my experience a lot. And, you know, I just wanted to say that I have specific examples of also, I think we also, I also benefited from having people kind of take the decision away from me. And, you know, I think we do, a lot of us in medicine, women and men alike, you know, of, I can do this. I don't need special accommodations.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think that's partially with me wanting to have my baby after residency ended. Like I had this notion of like, I don't need or want special accommodations. I'm going to be pregnant during residency, then I'm going to have the baby after.
Yeah.
And there were multiple times during my pregnancy where somebody, a role model or a mentor figure, an attending, you know, was in the position to just say, we think of this is what we're going to do. And didn't really even kind of give me the option, and not in a paternalistic way, but in a caring way of like, we know you can do it, but we're
going to, you just don't need to.
You just don't need to. So, so two quick examples of that is that, you know, your story about being vagal a lot, what brings us to mind is when I was doing my first ICU rotation, you know, and I, as the resident on rounds, and the attending was like, okay, we should always round in a place where there's a chair for you to sit at, Rithika. And I was like, really, I don't need a chair.
And you're like, I don't need one.
Yeah, I'm perfectly fine. I can do this. Thanks. And I'm like, well, I'm just telling you, my wife, like, she used to get really vagal. So I'm just, you know, we should just do this. And I was like, no, I'm fine. And then literally 5 minutes in, I was like, I need a chair. And, but he had already said that and said like, this is what we should, this just is like what we should do, you. And normalize it. And like, my wife went through this, you know?
Yeah.
And then it was so much easier for me to say, I need a chair, rather than otherwise I would have sat there and like tried to suffer and maybe passed out at some point. But he made it okay that like, this is just what we're going to do.
That's awesome.
And then the other story I'll share, if that's okay, if I share another
Please,
story.
Yeah.
Towards the end of my pregnancy, I mentioned that my son in residency was born a month early, and because I had complications at the end, I was starting to develop gestational hypertension. I had told my chief resident, you know, is it okay if I step out of lectures once in a while? And I have to run upstairs to OB, you know, OB was in the same building as our clinic.
Yeah.
I had to run upstairs to OB, this week, every day in the morning to get my blood pressure checked. And he was like, oh yeah, of course. And I think was a little bit deer in the headlights, like, oh no, like a pregnant woman having complications. So he went to our, one of our program directors and told her what was going on, unbeknownst to me, which is fine. I'm really close to this person. And, later that afternoon, I was in clinic seeing my own patients, and the program director knocks on the door, like to my clinic room. And says, like, interrupts the visit and says, excuse me, I'm so sorry, I have to speak with Dr. Perrin. And you know, you can imagine, like, you're the resident. Exactly. I was like, oh no, I'm in trouble.
What did I do?
And she pulls me out and says, you need to rest. The rest of your clinics have been canceled. Your patients have been called. You know, please finish this visit and you can do what you need to do. And it was not something I had asked for. And it was again somebody saying, this is what is medically needed for this person, and we're going to make it okay for her to take that. And lo and behold, my son was born like 2 days later.
Oh wow.
And my plan was just to like keep working through it, which all of us always,
you've been taught this self-denial all through medical school.
Yeah. And a lot of us, you know, and in different professions as well, just like keep working until the very end, because like, we just want to save our leave, and we just can do it. We don't want special accommodations.
Yeah.
And I was lucky that I had mentors who just kind of said, this is what is needed. You know, there are other doctors who will be able to provide care for your patients. We're going to take this decision away from you and help you do what you need to do. And I felt extremely supported. And at the time, yeah, I was like, no, I like kind of protested, and literally my water broke a day and a half later.
Well, I appreciate you sharing, because I wanted to ask a little bit more about how you felt about that. Because I think what helped was these were trusted people who you know and who care about you. But I could see it going either way. Like, I think the people who offered these things to you, the chair and canceling your clinics, obviously had the best of intentions for you. But I could see maybe another woman or a different scenario being like, no, I can do this. I need to push through, and maybe not having such a positive response to that. And yeah, I think it's good that you took them up on those offers and did take the rest that you needed. But I think it is so ingrained in us, this self-denial and I can push through attitude. Like, did you experience any of that, or was it more just relief, yeah, of like, oh, thank God someone's taking care of me because I don't know how to take care of me right now?
Yeah, that's such a good point. I think I had a similar experience. I had another complication during my second pregnancy, and a similar experience with somebody else just like kind of taking the decision out of my hands. Mm. And all of these times, it was always somebody who I had a close relationship with.
Yeah.
Who was like a friend and mentor figure. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes a lot of difference, right? And so, yeah, you know, if you want to, let's say you're listening and you're a faculty member who can have this sort of positive impact, but maybe you're not, you might not be the right person actually to communicate that. I think it really does.
You have to be the right person.
The difference that it came from somebody who had a longstanding relationship with, who could say, I know you're not you, I know you want to do this, I know you can do this because I've known you for years, mm-hmm, but I really think like I can be more objective than you in this moment, and I can help you take care of yourself. So please take this off, like, please take, yeah, care of yourself now. And because it came from those people who could say that with objectivity and with honesty that they, I knew they knew that I could do it.
Yeah. They weren't saying you're not capable.
Me. Yeah. Because that was the last thing I wanted anybody to think of me. And that was the last thing I wanted to think of myself. Right. I can do this. And for it to come from people who could say like, I know you can do this. There's nothing to prove. You just need to take care of yourself and the baby. And I have made that, yeah, easy for you. I've, mm-hmm, removed all the obstacles. You don't have to ask for permission. You don't have to call your patients. Like, we're going to do these things for you, mm-hmm, and your patients will be okay.
Yeah. I love that. I think that's such an important message that we can kind of pay it forward, because, you know, especially working with trainees, it's so hard for them to ask for what they need and deserve. So, yeah, if we can kind of take that burden off of them, that's so, so big.
It's so hard to ask, and it's so hard to even know what you can ask for. Like, I would have never thought to even ask for even that simple thing as a chair. Like, I, yeah, wouldn't God have forbid, asked for, yeah, right. Like, when do you ever see somebody sitting on rounds? Like,
totally.
I see you. You don't even know what you can ask for. And so for somebody, yeah, to come in there and say like, this can be done and should be done, needs to be done. Mm-hmm. And we want you to take care of yourself because we care about you. And we care about your baby and we need you to be healthy so that you can come, right, back.
Yeah, totally. So, that's huge. So I want to fast forward just a little bit. So you have your son early, you're still in residency. And as you mentioned, your husband was a resident at the time too. So how did that, mm-hmm, play out for the two of you? Any kind of reflections on that in hindsight?
Yeah. I had really positive experiences. And I think, you know, again, I feel really, that's why I'm still here at part of the, yeah, same community, because I felt so taken care of as our family grew. I think, you know, it's a funny thing that happens in residency. You know, one of the first people to find out that we were expecting was our program director to show up in his office to be, yeah, like, we're pregnant.
Yeah.
help.
Yes.
You know, kind of walked us through every step, helped us, you know, refigure out our schedules, both of us, to give us, you know, two trainees in the same residency program, time off. The person who was pulled to cover my husband when I went into labor is still a dear friend of ours, and kind of jokingly refers to himself as the godfather of our oldest son because he made it possible for my husband to be in the hospital.
Yeah.
You know, I think times have changed even in 5 years. My husband got less paternity leave than residents are eligible to get now. Mm. So I'm really great. I'm grateful and proud of that work that we've done to make the leave more equitable. I had more leave than he did because of the policies at that time. And actually with our second son, he has been able to take, had been able to take a longer parental leave the second time because of changes in cultural changes and changes in his job description. And, you know, I think the first time we went through it, we felt like it was fine. And he got the absolute time that we needed, but now having done it the second time where he got more leave, I do think, he looks back at the first experience with a little bit of sadness that of what he missed.
Mm. Can I ask what the amount of time was he got each time?
So the second time he got 3 months.
Oh, awesome.
He got 3 months of fully paid leave, which was amazing.
That's amazing.
And, he had a lot of flexibility in being able to take it. So he took 1 month off when the baby was first born with me. Yeah. And then when I went back to work is when he took his second 2 months off.
That's awesome.
Which was also huge for me, right? Like going back to work, as you know, it's like,
it's hard.
Oh my gosh. So many
Who do you leave your baby
it's
with?
So hard. Yeah. Who do you leave your baby with? Do you trust that they're eating or trying to figure out a pump and all these, somebody to troubleshoot all this with and so many things to juggle. And just knowing that I could work through it with like a partner that I could give him critical feedback on, you're wasting too much milk with the bottles.
Oh my gosh. That's my biggest stress right now.
So we could really work on that as a team. You know, that was just huge for us. So we feel so, you know, I'm so glad that, you know, there's new legislation in paid, like he actually got this covered because he's a federal employee now and federal employees is like, this is, one of the benefits that they have. And more institutions I know are moving towards this model, which is it's very
huge.
Overdue.
Yes.
the first time, I am sorry if I don't remember the exact details, but I think he got, ultimately he was home for about 4 weeks. I think it was 2 weeks of parental leave and then 2 weeks of like a reading or research or maybe, maybe it was like 1 week of that and 1 week of elective. So I just remember it was like 2 weeks of dedicated and then 2 weeks of something like small going in the background, a lighter, much lighter schedule. And then after that, went back to full time.
Okay. And then, so fast forwarding again a little bit. So you both end up doing a chief year together. And the way that they do the chief year at Beth Israel is you finish residency, do a year of something else, and then you do your chief year. So your son was about two during your chief year?
He was one. He was just one.
Okay. Yeah. And then after your chief year is when you're kind of applying for your first real jobs. And so I would love to hear a little bit more about how you and Jim kind of navigated looking for your jobs together at the same time while taking into account both of your career goals while having a baby, and how are we going to finance childcare? Who's going to watch him? I mean, there's so many things there, but kind of just, you know, what are your initial recollections about that time period and how you worked that out?
So I could talk a little bit about my career trajectory in that context. So I mentioned that I was briefly a hospitalist, and when I was finishing my residency, my plan had been to go into hospital medicine. That's what I did during that gap year that you mentioned. And and that wasn't just, you know, that the plan hadn't been that was just like 1 year of doing that. The plan was going to be that was the first year of my forever job.
Okay.
And my plan had been
to be actually.
My plan had been to always be a hospitalist. So I was an inpatient chief, not the outpatient chief, and that sort of thing. So so was my husband. He was also a hospitalist during that gap year. And then he went on to do palliative care fellowship after residency, but the plan also always for him was to do like some sort of combined job where he did palliative care and hospital medicine. So we both thought we would be hospitalists to some extent or another, forever. And we got our first taste of that, in that first gap year, and it was hard. And I want to give the major disclaimer that this is not necessarily hospital medicine's fault. I think there was a lot of variables in that year. And and to be honest, a little bit of naivete on my part.
Yeah.
I finished residency on maternity leave. I took several months off. I actually had a really supportive hospital medicine boss who said, take one more month than you think you'll need, because
that's amazing.
You're in this unique position of being between jobs. Like, you'll never get this again. Mm. You're always going to want more time. So just join us. I had already told him I would take 4 months or something like that. And he was like, take one more month than you're even thinking, and just join us a month later. And I was like, oh, okay. I came back from maternity leave to my first ever faculty like attending job. So new job, new responsibilities, all while being a new mother, and all that new job and responsibilities that it entails.
Yeah.
And it was hard. I went into a full-time, like 100% clinical FTE schedule.
Wow.
My husband was doing the same, also as a new parent, also without family locally. We were working nights, weekends, at all the community sites, plus the flagship academic hospital. So a ton of variety in our schedules and in our jobs, and both of us doing that full time. And as people who know hospital medicine schedules know, like, they are very variable schedules.
That's so interesting. Just so sorry to interrupt, but just because I think a lot of people think hospital medicine, and it is great for some people, but I think a lot of people think the variability might be nice.
Yeah.
And maybe there's flexibility, but it's kind of a double-edged sword.
It was a double-edged sword. Exactly. It was a double-edged sword. That's a great way to put it. And I think having a household where there were two of us doing that made it really challenging. And so we had initially come up with this great plan where, like, we were going to stagger our schedules so that, and while also having childcare, but that maybe we wouldn't need childcare full time, because one
That's
of us
would doing right now,
theoretically always be home. It's so hard. And then we realized we also were constantly causing paths. We were not seeing each other and actually spending time as a family. I remember, so that was a challenge. We had a nanny who we shared this complex family Google Calendar with, and she was great. She was willing to work long days, work weekends. Mm-hmm. And then we also gave her, like, if there were days, you know, she would have stretches of time that she was completely off as well, to kind of make up for the long stretches of time that she was working with us, like a hospital schedule. And
it's great you found her.
Yes. And that was honestly one of the stressors, because then she ended up growing her family. And so we couldn't keep her any longer. And the thought of, like, how am I going to find this unicorn again was really stressful. But I think there were two things that made me realize this was not a sustainable plan for our family. And really it came down to the fact that, like, both of us had a lot of variety in our schedules, and we couldn't have, there was not, between the two of us, one of us did not have a predictability.
Yeah.
And so I can recall two instances where I was like, okay, something has to change. That was, one was I was trying to enroll my son in swimming classes, and I realized there was never a single swim session, like daytime, evening, weekend, but I could always say that I was going to be always
That's
available.
So hard.
Like, I could not sign him up for a Saturday morning class, because I sometimes work Saturday mornings. Like, there was never a single time. And I was like, oh my gosh, how are we going to,
it's not going to work.
It was just like a realization of, like, how is this going to work? You know, like, it's swimming class for a baby. It doesn't really matter. It's not important. But one day,
it's like a light bulb moment though.
It was a light bulb moment. And the second was, I was working a shift in the community hospital while still breastfeeding, and overnight shift. And I had brought my pump, and this hospital didn't have OB patients. So they didn't have, like, you know, lactation consultant or lactation supplies or pump or anything like that. So I brought my own pump, but I forgot all those parts.
And that's just not
going
to work.
A full overnight shift. Like, what is going to happen?
Yeah. What did you
do? My son was already asleep at home. It was the middle of the night. My husband, his winter, packed him up in the car, brought him to the hospital parking lot, and I nursed him in the car during my shift. And
that is,
I mean, I was
wild.
So grateful to my husband for doing this.
Oh, I mean, Jim is an all-star. That is huge. But, like, wow, the things we have to do.
Yeah. I was like, wow. That was another light bulb moment for me.
Yeah. Wow. That is wild.
And I remember the head nurse on the unit, she had tried so many things to try to find supplies for me, but, like, where was she going to get supplies in the middle of the night at a hospital that didn't stack them?
Right.
And so then we resorted to having them, like, bring him, wake him up, bring him, nurse him in the car.
Wow. That is wild. Yeah, I'm speechless.
So those were two things where I just kind of recognized that as a family unit, we needed a little bit more stability. And then there were things that I missed clinically about having longitudinal patients. So there were other factors as well. And I still look back at the hospital medicine time, you know, as with a little bit of bittersweetness. Like there are definitely things I miss about it. And in an, you know, alternate life where maybe, you know, maybe Jim wasn't also a hospitalist, maybe, you know, maybe I had other supports or something where I would have continued doing that and I would have loved it. But I also love primary care. So I'm fortunate that I found, you know, there are multiple things I enjoyed doing clinically. Yeah. And this just made more sense for our family unit.
And so then, so you're working primary care now. And we mentioned, I think before we started recording, that you are doing 3 sessions a week and 1 session precepting.
Yeah.
And then what is Jim doing now?
He does a mix of things.
Yeah.
He works for the VA hospital. He's a hospitalist, a palliative care inpatient consultant, and also is the medical director of their hospital at home program. So he has a lot of variety in his job clinically that way.
Okay. So it sounds like his schedule is still maybe a little bit more variable.
It is more variable, but we did take family considerations into account when he was also looking for jobs after after fellowship. So I mentioned that, you know, he's a federal employee because he works for the VA and had a really generous leave policy because of that in comparison to some other local institutions. And that was a perk. The VA also had, you know, culturally, he was really attracted to the work-life balance culture that he felt there. And that has been true to our experience. And so, he loves his job. He loves working with the veteran population. He loves the hospital home program and the variety of jobs, the things that he gets to do, but he also loves the increased emphasis on work-life balance that he has found there as well. And that would have, that did play a role in his job selection.
Yeah. And I was curious too, we were kind of emailing back and forth before meeting to chat today. And one of the things you mentioned in making your career decisions, I don't know if this was, you were commenting more kind of like globally this plays in for people or if it played in for you, but that cultural expectations are often a factor. Did that play a role for you or kind of what were your thoughts on that?
Cultural expectations and sorry, can you remind me like what kind of
just in aspect? Terms of like, like, you know, I'm guessing maybe like traditional gender roles or kind of what your family expects or what society expects, if that played a role or, you know, maybe it didn't dictate your decisions, but if you felt any sort of pressure because of that.
Let's see. I think that I feel like there's this palpable shift in culture. And I also, again, have a really equal partner in this kind of parenthood or as equal as possible. You know, he might not be the one lactating, but is also, but is the one who's like most familiar with like, you know, how to store the milk and thaw the milk and all that. Like he takes that cognitive load away from me. So we are as equal partners as can be possible. But I think there's still a lot of, I think I feel like an internal conflict as like, you know, can I be doing more? Could I be doing more? Should I be doing more? Why not? Am I doing more? You know, as a mom, my older son is in kindergarten now. So that's like a whole new part of life that we are learning, you know, navigating the school system and all the activities that that comes with. And there's like, you know, the classroom moms and I cannot imagine having the bandwidth to ever take that on. And even seeing the, you know, it does seem to happen that it feels like the moms more than the dads are going in on their kid's birthday. And there are pictures that come out to the whole classroom as they show the kid's birthday being celebrated with sometimes the dad, but usually the mom. And I'm looking at the calendar being like, okay, what day of the week is my son's birthday going to fall in? Like, am I going to be able to be the one to go or will I have clinic that day or a meeting or, you know, like, let me block this off right now. And how can I make this happen? And so I think I feel that kind of implicit pressure to kind of keep up And that is challenging. And I think, something that you and I were chatting about earlier was something that I personally am trying to work on cultivating, is kind of having grace towards myself when that happens, you know, just, and I kind of think of that as kindness, turned into ourselves. I mean, I think I often ask my mentors, like, how are you making this work? How do you make it work? And the more people I talk to about it, I realize like, that might be a myth or something that we're, you know, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow that may not actually be there. I think very few of us can consistently make it work. Instead, we make what work when we can. And I guess, you know, we are all wearing these different hats. Like, I'm a doctor, I'm a researcher, I'm a mom, I'm a wife, I'm a daughter. And, you know, some days I can be like a really amazing daughter and like, be there for my mom when she needs me, or my dad, or my spouse. Some days I can be this really amazing doctor and just like go, you know, patient needs me to go above and beyond that day, and I'll do everything I can to make that happen. And some days my son just really needs me. And on any given day, I'm probably doing an awesome job at one of those, maybe two of them. But I think a lot of us have the tendency, myself especially, like, to look at those other pieces, those other hats that I'm wearing that didn't go well that day. And I'm trying to do a better job of being like, today I was an awesome ex. And, you know, I the other things got done. I leaned on my support network. My husband like packed the lunch this day because I couldn't do it. And you know, as a team, we're getting through it. And just remembering that we're doing the best we can. And we're awesome at any one of those roles at any given day. But to be awesome, all of them every day might be that pot of gold at the end of the
rainbow. Not fair to ask of ourselves.
Yeah.
No, I think that's such an important message, because I think life just gets more complicated the longer it goes on.
Yeah, we kind of accumulate, you know, more and more responsibilities and things we want to do and engage in, and just remembering that at the end of the day, there's one of us and we are going to do the best that we can.
Of course. And speaking of accumulating responsibilities, you mentioned baby number two is here now. He's going to be a year and 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And so what was it like having a baby a few years into being an attending versus, you know, as a trainee? Mm-hmm. Were there any, you know, big differences that stood out to you? And with that framing, any ways that you might advise someone who's considering having kids at those different stages in their career?
Yeah. They were very different experiences for me. I don't think I can say that one was better than the other. They both had their own challenges. They both had their things that made it a little bit easier. So, you know, during residency, I kind of had only like my job to focus on, and then the pregnancy. I felt, and the job, you know, as resident, is pretty prescribed. It's like, you have to be here on this day and do this thing.
Yeah.
And in a way that kind of took some of the guesswork out of it. It made the kind of load easier. I think as an attending, you know, I did have more flexibility, 100% attending some more flexibility, but I also felt, you know, more ownership over my patients and like, you know, how am I going to break it to them that I'm going to go on maternity leave, and like, what's the plan going to be like while I'm gone? Who's going to, you know, who am I going to pass the baton to?
Yeah, but I'm curious, what did you do? Because I think you're so right. Like in residency, it's kind of baked in, although you feel badly having your colleagues cover for you. The cover just kind of baked in. But like as an attending, if you're going to take months off and you have your own panel, like what did you do?
Yeah. I mean, I think at the end of the day, again, having that grace for yourself that, you know, I am human. I am a human being who is going to have a family. Like, this is a totally normal thing. I should not feel bad that I'm doing this. And you know, when I would see my patients before, and I knew like their follow-up would fall when I was on leave, that's when I would talk to them about a plan and kind of introduce them to somebody that I'd be working closely with that would kind of be their point person while I was gone. And for my more complex patients, kind of did this warm handoff with the nurse practitioner that I work closely with to kind of pass off the pending tasks. But it was challenging. And the vast majority of my patients were extremely supportive and excited for me. But I did have a couple of people who felt a little abandoned, I think. And that was hard. That was really hard. Being able to go in there with a partner and say, this is who's going to be taking care of you while I'm gone. And we work so closely together, that helped. But, mm-hmm. It was hard. And I had to remind myself that what I was doing was normal. And that there were,
it sounds crazy, but it's true.
It's so crazy. You have to remind yourself of that. And there are other smart, talented people who can and will happily take care of your patients for you while you're gone. That part was challenging. I had some more complications at the end of this pregnancy, even though I had willed it to not happen. And again, he was born a month early, even though I had willed that to not happen. So suddenly mics were canceled overnight because I suddenly went into labor. And again, I had another supportive person in a leadership role at my practice kind of saying, okay, you cannot keep coming in. Like, we're converting all of your patients to telehealth starting. I think she told me this on Wednesday, and she said, starting Friday, all of your appointments are going to be scheduled to telehealth because you cannot keep coming in. And my water broke that night again.
Wow. It's all of you have these supportive people who have a sixth sense about you.
Yeah, they really do.
But another good reminder to just pay it forward for, the people who might be more junior than you who don't know or don't feel for whatever reason that they can advocate for themselves.
Yeah. It was crazy how many times somebody had to tell me, there are other doctors, like, you are not the only doctor, Ritika. Like, there are other doctors who will take care of your patients. It will be okay.
Yeah. And I hope you don't mind me saying, but I think it's extra noteworthy that you, as someone who was a chief resident and has a role centered on wellness, that even you felt concerned to ask for these things.
Yeah.
When you had a supportive environment, you're focused on wellness, you had been through this experience before. I think it just speaks to how hard it is for people to ask for what they need, but that oftentimes people will be willing to give it to you.
Yes, exactly. Like, we don't realize how much is available if we ask for it. But again, I think that's where you need a sponsor or an advocate for you. Because it's hard to become objective. I was so focused in on my patient's needs. That I didn't think that, like, okay, somebody else can meet them, or they can be met some other way. And you're right. Like, I think about wellness as so much part of my day, and yet it wasn't obvious to me when it was my own kind of turn. And I think that speaks to, we've had so much ingraining over all of our training time. Like, this is how you're professional, this is what you do. And so kind of being able to we don't practice the ability to take a step back and ask for those things that we need. I think just also culturally, there's so much more that can be done. I talked about how I had great coverage, but both times it was not like the people covering me had nothing, and my husband had nothing else to do. They still had their full-time jobs. Now also, tack on another full-time job of like covering me or my husband, or to be honest, like, they can't do it full time. So my patients just kind of get like held, but things don't maybe move forward like, they would have if I were there. And so really asking our systems to develop better ways so that when we need to take time off to be with our families, whether that's for child rearing or whether that's, care of an elderly patient or your own care, elderly family member or your own care or anything, how do we make it so that the happy burden of covering a colleague, having a baby isn't actually a burden, but rather something you can more fully devote yourself to. Just, could you imagine if one of my colleagues could just like one day a week, just be like, I'm going to be Ritika this week and take care of all of her patients. Like, how much better would that be for my patients? How much easier would that be for me, knowing that like one day a week, my colleague's schedule was cleared off so that she could be me.
Yeah.
Right. And that's just right now, it's just like kind of done piecemeal and like done. People take on that extra, so they're away from their families for an extra hour or two that day so that I can be with mine. And that's something I think that as a society, as a field really needs to be questioned and changed. for the betterment of patients.
Of course. Yeah. And I think we, again, had spoken in email back and forth a little bit before meeting today, and you had mentioned in your emails, which I agree with, that training is maybe designed for only one specific phenotype of person to succeed. And I know you were starting to talk about that a little bit, but I was curious if you could tell me a little bit more your thoughts on that. And I'm putting you a little bit on the spot here, but if there are things that you think we could do to address that or change it.
Yeah, I think that's, thank you for bringing that up. This is something that I've been thinking more and more about recently. And I think it applies to medical training, but also medical careers. So I'm kind of at all stages of the medical career. I think the way it is built now, both the training years, but also the academic advancement of being in faculty, is really best suited for specific phenotype. It's like made, you know, so that a specific type of person can excel and climb the ladder. And by type of person, I mean like their external factors. So, you know, things that, you know, not having children, not having older parents to take care of, like not having to devote calories to making breast milk rather than calories to fuel your brain to write papers, right? Like, all of these other things make it much, much harder to excel in the current format that we have. And I think it's not unique to having children or being a parent or being a mother. Other demands, like we've alluded to, can also make it more difficult, you know, make it so that you don't fit this perfect phenotype that will excel. But I think what makes motherhood particularly challenging is that the opportunity costs with motherhood comes at an inflection point just because of our biological clock that, you know, either we're in our training years or we're in early career years where really we have either super inflexible schedules and we're on a huge growth career learning curve, or we're early career faculty members where we're supposed to be really building that foundation, building up our patient panel, developing our niche, you know, showing people who we really are. And so we're at this like great inflection point. And that's when we have to hit the pause button and take time off to have children, take time out of our busy schedules to pump, take energy away to make that nutrition, to make a baby, and really just disconnect for months at a time. And then even when we do come back, like suddenly be floating all these other things at a time where, you know, shouldn't we be thinking about promotion from instructor? Shouldn't we be thinking about our first job? Shouldn't we be thinking about how to get our name out there? And again, these are all issues, like in terms of needing time away or juggling other things that other people who are not mothers have. But I think especially the timing and the coupled with the time demands, like comes at such a critical time that makes it particularly challenging.
Yeah. And I wanted to challenge you a little bit on that. I'm putting you on the spot again, but I don't agree with this statement, but what would you say to the critics who say, well, yeah, you know, women are taking time off. Of course they shouldn't be promoted, or, you know, their mental energy is stretched, so they're not as good of physicians, or they're not as present. Like, what would you say to those critics who are like, oh, you know, you're not as dedicated to your job, so you don't deserve these things?
I think I would, I'm having time to like, I'm having difficulty just getting past the initial emotional visceral reaction I have to that first.
Right.
But I think again, like you really have to question the system, right? Like the people who are saying that are not acknowledging that the system has really been cultivated to create, to allow a certain type of person to thrive and to create a specific outcome. You know how that saying, it kind of reminds me of that saying, like every system is perfect at getting the outcome that it gets.
Yeah.
And, you know, so why do you not see a lot of, you know, women in leadership positions? Why do you not see, why do you see higher burnouts amongst younger women in medicine? You know, we're getting those outcomes because the system is set up to not necessarily best allow those people to thrive. And, we really have to challenge those notions of like, well, this is how we can show our productivity. This is how you get promoted. This is how you, you know, get these carve outs in your job. And it's really challenging those initial, the initial givens in the situation.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. And I think the other thing, I'm not sure your thoughts on this too, but I think most maternity leaves people take 3 months or less is probably the pretty standard, which 3 months in the grand scheme of your career is mm-hmm. not that long, but I think it's more the perception that yeah. you took time away and it's looked at it in a negative way, but it's only 3 months.
You, our institutions want people to be invested, their employees mm-hmm. to be invested for years or decades. So like 12 weeks, like those of us who've been on maternity leave also recognize that 12 weeks isn't even 3 months. Like you're right. not even yes. giving us the full 3 months. And, that's just such a short amount of time in the grand scheme of things. And that's, again, like I've been luckily surrounded by people who've been able to point that out to me and say like, you're not asking for much. You need to just take this time. But really so much work has to be done at a much broader level, like a much larger scale of recognizing this and supporting this and making it such a given that people take 3 months, 6 months, like
right.
and are supported in that. And somebody else is empowered and has the availability to continue your work while you're gone.
Yeah. I agree completely. I think, I know we're running up towards the end of our time here. You clearly have a lot of background experience, both personally, professionally. I'm curious if you have any kind of words of wisdom or advice that you might want to leave any women with who are maybe in the thick of things with the start of their career or thinking about having kids.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Not to sum it all up in just sentence for us.
I would say there's, a lot of people have told me there's no perfect time, and that's right. I mean, every time is perfect for you and your family, like whatever is mm-hmm. perfect for you and your family, coming back to that theme about kindness and grace to yourself and humility, that your patients will be taken care of without you. Your work can go on pause. Your family needs you. And if this is what the right time is, then that's perfect. And nothing else needs to matter. And in order to help make that possible, I think all of us have a duty to build those relationships, be mentors and be advocates and sponsors and continue to make the path easier and smoother, I should say. It almost never gets easier. There's always new expectations, but make the path smoother for those of us, other colleagues who are going through the similar thing, and then continuing to advocate. We just need like an overhaul of the whole system, like in terms of how we decide that we, what is, how somebody is productive and how somebody is contributing. Mm-hmm. And really just recognizing it takes a village and a community to raise the next generation. And, that village and community is each other, and we need to make that space for each other.
I love that. Ending on a good call to action on the grassroots level, but also on the system level.
Yeah.
I think that's a great way to end it. Well, thank you again so much for chatting with me today. And it again was so nice to catch up with you. I know we haven't seen each other in person in so long. So it was really nice chatting with you. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for carving out the space to build this community, Allie. This is really quite amazing. And I can't wait to learn more from the other wonderful people that you're
Yeah, of course. That's it for this week's episode. Thank you once again for tuning in and listening to the end. And as always, if you have any suggestions or guests that you think would be great to have on the podcast, please email me at momsofmedicine@gmail.com. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a rating and a review. Thanks so much. See you again in 2 weeks.